The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
I had always lived in a small neighborhood. One of those where everyone knows each other and rumors spread faster than news. My neighbor, Leonarda, was an older woman, robust, but quite nice. She lived alone, and although her house was always spotless, there was something that definitely made her stand out. The aroma of homemade food coming out of her kitchen. From my window, I could smell it every evening, and to tell you the truth, I was envious of the few who seemed to enjoy her dishes. One day, on my way home from work, I passed her in the driveway of my building. She was carrying a huge basket with what looked like ingredients for some recipe. I helped her carry the stuff, and she was quite grateful.
"Thomas, my dear, I appreciate your help. My back doesn't always work like it used to. Hey, I'm baking a delicious cake. I'd love for you to try it. Come over to the house tomorrow afternoon."
I found it hard to turn down invitations, and after all...
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
What harm could there be in sharing an afternoon with my neighbor? So I accepted. The next day, I showed up at her door at the appointed time. Leonarda welcomed me with open arms, as if she'd been waiting for me for hours. Her house was small and decorated in a classic style that perfectly matched her personality. The kitchen table was already set with a huge cake in the center, and the aroma of butter and sugar filled the air. We sat down at the table, and she served me the first slice of cake. As she did so, she went on and on about the recipe, explaining every detail with a passion I had rarely seen in anyone. She said that cooking was her way of life and that every dish she prepared was full of history and love.
"You don't know how happy it makes me to cook for others, Thomas. Food is a way to show affection, and for me, it's the only thing I really have left."
I took a bite. It was delicious, but it wasn't just that. The cake had a particular texture, something I couldn't identify. It wasn't unpleasant, just different. However, I didn't say anything. She seemed so proud of her work that I didn't want to ask her uncomfortable questions. We kept talking, and now and then I would cut myself another slice, almost without noticing.
"The cake you're eating has a secret ingredient, you know. Something that makes it unique."
I have to admit, it was the best food I had tasted in weeks. After some time living alone, fast food had become my daily routine, and that afternoon with Leonarda reminded me of what a real home-cooked meal was like. Time passed quickly, and before I knew it, the sun was beginning to set. With the afternoon already late, I got up to thank her for the meal and say goodbye. However, before I could take a step toward the door, Leonarda approached me.
"Thomas, before you go, I want you to try something special. It's a little project I've been working on, and I think you're just the person to try it out."
Her tone was so convincing that I couldn't say no. I watched her walk to the other side of the kitchen, where she picked up a large knife she used to cut portions.
"Don't worry. It's just one last slice."
She served me one more slice, but this time, the cake was not the same. It was darker, with a stronger, almost metallic aroma. Leonarda sat across from me, knife still in hand, watching me intently as I raised my fork. I took a bite, and the flavor was different, much more intense than before. My stomach churned, but I kept my composure. Leonarda didn't take her eyes off of me. Finally, she broke the silence.
"It's funny, isn't it? People never ask where things come from. They just eat what's in front of them without asking any questions. You didn't ask either, Thomas. Aren't you curious about what makes this cake so special?"
I swallowed hard, not knowing what to answer.
"Human blood is complicated to cook, but when you do it right, the result is indescribable."
"It's a joke, right? You're telling me it's made of blood?"
"No, Thomas. The secret ingredient in this cake is a little cinnamon, but this cake is different for another reason. The cinnamon is somewhat strong, but unlike the previous cakes, it's not so strong as to cover the human blood."
"What are you trying to say?"
"Everything you've eaten so far is made of blood. Blood from people like you. People I've invited into my home. People who tasted my food and then became a part of it."
My body tensed instantly, but my legs were unresponsive. The knife in her hand seemed even more threatening now that I understood what she was saying. Everything I had eaten, everything she had served me, it couldn't be true. When Leonarda mentioned the blood, everything I had consumed churned in my stomach. I couldn't contain myself. I leaned forward and vomited on the floor with a force I had never felt before. The bitter taste of what had just left my body only reminded me of what she had said. Blood. I had eaten a cake made with human blood. My throat burned, and my heart was beating so fast I could barely think. Leonarda looked at me with an unsettling calm.
"Oh, Thomas, don't worry about the vomit, dear. They all react the same way."
My head was spinning. I didn't know if it was the panic, the disgust, or the sudden dizziness blurring my vision. I had had tea before I ate the cake. Was there something in the tea? My limbs felt like they weighed tons. I tried to get up from the chair, but my legs didn't respond. Leonarda, always smiling, moved with calculated slowness. I watched as she pulled a handkerchief from her pocket, soaked in some liquid, and advanced towards me.
"Don't worry, dear. This won't hurt. You'll just go to sleep for a little while."
The feeling of panic exploded inside of me. With what little strength I had left, I tried to push her hand away, but my movements were clumsy, almost useless. The strong smell of chemicals overcame me, and my vision began to blur even more. I slid off the chair, falling to the floor with a thud.
"Do you want to go now, dear?"
My body was a mess. This wasn't because I had vomited or the disgust of having eaten blood. Something was making me weaker. With the last flickers of energy, I propelled myself forward, hitting the furniture with my body as I pushed myself away from her. I knew I couldn't run. I could barely stand. But as I saw the knife rise above me, my instincts took over. I propelled myself to the side, rolling on the ground as the knife came down hard where I was just seconds before. The force of its attack gave me a minimal advantage. Its unbalance allowed me to get up awkwardly and stagger to the window. With a desperate effort, I threw my body against the glass. The window shattered into 1,000 pieces as I hurled myself outward. I felt the glass cutting into my skin, but the pain was the only thing that kept me conscious. I landed in the front yard of her house. It was still daylight, but it was almost dark. I looked back and saw Leonarda leaning out of the window, watching me silently, knife still in hand. I crawled for what seemed like miles, but it was probably only a few yards before a neighbor came out of his house, alarmed by the noise. My vision was still blurry, and I felt the world around me getting darker with every second. The neighbor picked me up as best he could and carried me to his house. Everything was confusing. I heard his 911 calls. I felt movement, but I couldn't react. My body was simply not responding. I woke up hours later in the hospital, my head still spinning. A doctor rushed over when he saw me open my eyes.
"You're all right now. We found a very strong drug in your system. Fortunately, you vomited most of it up. But if you hadn't, it could have killed you. Tell us what happened to you. Did someone give you something to drink, or did you make it yourself?"
It all came together at once. The tea Leonarda had offered me when I arrived had something in it to paralyze me. After that, Leonarda wanted to finish incapacitating me with the chloroform. She was arrested instantly. She didn't seem angry, but was somewhat resigned. I was at her trial as the main witness. From what the cops had told me, she killed a lot of people during the First World War, but after that, she kept on doing it.
"During the war, I did what I had to do to survive. But I got a taste for baking, and well, I guess I didn't give up the hobby."
Leonarda had let me go, but only because she failed. It was clear that, for her, this was nothing more than a hobby. A hobby that killed many, many people who had made the mistake of trusting a sweet, lonely neighbor. This story is based on the crimes of Leonarda Cianciulli, a woman born in Italy in 1894, known as the Soap Maker of Correggio. During World War II, Leonarda became convinced that she needed to perform human sacrifices to protect her son, who had been drafted to fight at the front. Between 1939 and 1940, Leonarda murdered many people. After deceiving them to enter her home, she killed them with an axe or knife, dismembered their bodies, and used the human fat to make soap, while, with the blood, she baked cakes. These products were distributed among acquaintances and sold without raising any suspicions.
All I remember from that night is waking up in the dark with a heavy head and a strong, musty smell that turned my stomach. I could barely move. My hands were bound and my body was sore from what seemed like hours of lying on the cold ground. My mind was trying to piece together what had happened before I ended up here. I remember we were in our carriage, Matt and I, going home after a late dinner. We were planned for the upcoming weekend when suddenly everything went black. Then silence. The sound of chains dragging on the ground snapped me out of my daze. I felt someone else moving in the darkness. I swallowed spit, my throat dry as paper. "Matt?" "I'm here. Whoever brought us here didn't tie me up for some reason." I heard him move toward me, heard his steady footsteps on the floor, and a moment later his hands were in mine, trying to untie the ropes that pinned me down. "Where are we?" He didn't answer right away. I just heard him breathing heavily as he tried to free my hands. When he finally did, we sat in silence for a few seconds, trying to get our bearings in the gloom. The only thing I knew for sure was that we were not where we were supposed to be. "I don't know, but we have to get out of here. Now." We got up and started groping around in the dark, trying to find a way out. It was impossible to see much, but I felt the walls tight around us as if we were in some kind of basement. Every step we took felt heavier, and the air was so thick with humidity that it was hard to breathe. "How did we get here? Do you remember anything?" He didn't have any answers either. We hadn't heard any car stop, no doors open.
We were just here, as if we had appeared out of nowhere. But what bothered me the most was the feeling that we weren't alone. After a few minutes, Matt found what appeared to be a metal door. He tried to open it, but it was locked. Damn it! I went over to him, trying to calm him down, even though I was on the verge of panic myself. Let's find a way out. That's when we heard it. A slight creaking sound, as if something was moving behind us. We turned immediately, looking for the source of the noise, but there was nothing. We ventured down a narrow corridor that we found at the back of the room. There were no windows, just old brick walls and a feeling of being deeper and deeper in the trap. As we progressed, the corridor became narrower and more crooked, as if it had been designed to confuse us. But the true horror soon revealed itself. We came to a room, and what we saw made us instinctively recoil. It was a small room, dimly lit by a dim light that flickered irregularly. In the center of the room was a mannequin, standing erect, holding a rusty knife in his hand. His face was carved with details reminiscent of a man, with hollow eyes and a crooked smile, as if mocking our situation. Matt grabbed my arm and pulled me back. "We need to get out of here," he said quietly, but urgently. We started walking back, but then the mannequin fell to the ground with a thud. Something, or someone, had knocked it over. Without a second thought, Matt and I broke into a run down the hallway. Matt's footsteps echoed just ahead of me, getting faster and faster, but that's when I felt a nudge. I fell hard to the ground, scraping my hands as I tried to break my fall. Matt had pushed me. "What the hell are you doing?" He didn't answer me. I lay on the ground crying, gathering my strength to get up as I assumed my partner had sacrificed me just to buy more time. Matt kept running, leaving an increasing distance between us. I tried to get up as quickly as possible, panic beginning to grow inside of me. I looked back, expecting to see someone or something chasing us, but there was nothing. The only thing moving in that place was Matt, running as if his life depended on it. Then I heard it. A snap, followed by a piercing scream. The lights came on for us to contemplate what was happening. Matt had stepped into something, a trap. I ran to where he was, my mind struggling to process what I was seeing. A series of blades had activated under his feet, and now he was trapped, his leg completely shattered by the blades. He was screaming in pain, a mixture of shock and terror on his face as he tried, futilely, to free himself. The blades had hit him so brutally that blood splattered on the nearby walls, his skin torn by the rusted metal. I tried to get closer, but as his leg came off, he fell and his head was caught in a bear trap. I knew in that instant that there was nothing to be done. He died instantly. I knew I couldn't stay there for long. I was sure the killer was nearby, enjoying everything he had planned. There was no choice but to move on. My legs were shaking, but I managed to move forward. The traps on the floor reminded me that everything in that house was designed to kill us. I reached another door at the end of the corridor. As soon as I opened it, I heard it. A buzzing sound that grew louder and louder until it became the unmistakable sound of an electric saw.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
I didn't have to look to know what was coming behind me. It wasn't Matt. It was the real monster. I ran. The saw was getting closer, and even though my body screamed in pain, my mind told me only one thing. Keep running. I ran blindly through the corridors of the house, tripping over furniture, pushing doors, dodging anything that looked like a trap. Finally, I came to what appeared to be a back door. I pushed it with all my might and bolted outside without looking back. I was in the woods. There was no time to think. The sound of the saw still echoed in my ears, but at least now I had a bit of a head start. I ran aimlessly, just wanting to get as far away from that house as possible. I was very cold, but I kept running, driven by pure survival instinct. Despite the darkness, I was able to keep moving. I had no idea where I was going, I just knew I couldn't stop. My breathing became erratic and my legs trembled with exhaustion, but the fear was stronger than any pain. After a while, the sound of the saw faded, but I dared not stop. Finally, my strength left me and I fell to the ground, panting. I looked back, expecting to see the killer emerge from the trees, but there was nothing. For the first time in what seemed like hours, silence fell over the place. As the sun began to peek through the trees, I found a small town. I walked towards it with what little strength I had left, covered in dirt and blood. The few people who were outside at that hour looked at me, but didn't care enough to approach. Arriving at the police station, I collapsed on the ground. Words were barely out of my mouth as I tried to explain what had happened. The cops looked at me in shock. They couldn't believe what I was telling them, but they believed me. It all fit with several missing persons reports they had. All I know after that is that they caught the man, a terrifying serial killer who had already killed many people by kidnapping them and leaving them in his booby-trapped basement. With my testimony, they managed to capture him, and if I hadn't escaped that night, he would have surely continued killing. This story is based on the crimes of H.H. Holmes, whose real name was Herman Webster Mudgett. Holmes kidnapped couples, usually during the Chicago World's Fair, and kept them under control, rendering them unconscious. Once asleep, he would transport them to his hotel, the Castle of Horrors, a building designed as a death trap. The place was full of false corridors, doors that led nowhere and hermetically sealed rooms. When couples awoke, Holmes would force them to try to escape. Holmes tortured his victims using a variety of weapons. Among his methods, he used knives, hammers, and gas chambers to asphyxiate those who failed to escape. On some occasions, he used an electric saw to dismember his victims while they were still alive, prolonging their suffering. After the couple's deaths, Holmes disposed of their bodies in his basement, using acid in ovens, and sold body parts to medical schools.
I find it very ironic how the woman I once called the love of my life was the very same person who destroyed everything I held dear. She wasn't always like this, though, as I can still remember when I first met her 20 years ago. Her name was Susan, and she was the most beautiful woman I'd ever seen. I'd met her at school, and we hit it off immediately. We were basically inseparable after that. Susan was a wild girl who liked guns, and even if we didn't see eye to eye on everything, I still loved her with all my heart. We dated for a while after graduating before I popped the question, and she made me the happiest man by saying yes. We then got married in a beautiful ceremony, and we settled down. It wasn't long after that before we were blessed with a beautiful baby girl, and a few years after the birth of our first daughter, our second daughter was born. I truly admired and cherished my little family. Susan loved her girls as they were her pride and joy, and we were really happy. But unfortunately, our happiness didn't last long, as over the years, things started to get worse. I can't remember when I first noticed it, but I slowly watched the woman I love turn into someone else. Susan's entire character had now changed, as she became overly anxious and paranoid. At first, I thought she was going through a phase that would soon pass, but things took a turn for the worse as Susan attempted to take her life on numerous occasions. I still loved Susan with all my heart, so I did everything I could to help. I started by checking her into a private mental health facility. And it was at this facility that I was told Susan was suffering from depression, anxiety, and other mental health issues. Due to this, the therapist had to put her on numerous prescription pills to help. Things got a bit better for a while after that, as Susan started doing well and we were finding our footing as a couple again. But tragedy struck as Susan's grandfather died. Susan loved that man with all her heart. He was also the reason for her love of firearms, as she'd inherited a .38 caliber handgun from him. She really struggled with the news, as her grandfather's loss hurt her deeply. To make matters even worse, she also lost her mother just 2 months after that. All of this was too much for Susan to handle, as she fell into a downward spiral. All the progress she'd made instantly went down the drain, and she was now worse than before. I knew she was going through a lot, so I tried my best to support her and help get her through it, but no matter what I did, nothing worked, as Susan just kept getting worse with each passing day. All this took a huge toll on our relationship, as expected, but even with everything she was going through, Susan's relationship with our daughters remained perfect. She talked about them all the time, and she was so proud of them. I also loved our daughters and the women they'd grown to become. Our eldest daughter was 22 now. She'd just graduated and started working. She was also seeing a long-term boyfriend who I liked, and it seemed like they were going to tie the knot soon. My youngest daughter was also doing well. She was 17 and in high school. I loved my girls so much that I was willing to try my best to make things work with Susan. I doubled my efforts and tried all I could to recreate the spark that would revitalize our dying relationship, but it felt like I was pouring water on a hard rock. It was so hard for me to admit, but I now knew that after more than 20 years of being together, our marriage was over. I waited until my upcoming 45th birthday to tell Susan that I didn't want to be in our marriage anymore. I figured it'd be the best time to tell her, as we'd all be there as a family. The celebration didn't start off well, as Susan and my eldest daughter got into an altercation earlier that day. She was opposed to our daughter marrying her long-term boyfriend, and Susan threatened to lock her up in order to stop the marriage. I told Susan that I supported the marriage, and our eldest daughter and I wasn't going to allow her to stop it. All this just made Susan furious, as she had an attitude for the rest of the day. After the argument we'd all just had, I thought telling Susan about my plans for divorce would have been a bad idea. But I decided to get it over with, so I called her somewhere private, and I told her I wanted to leave. After I broke the news to Susan, her eyes turned crazy as she looked at me and said,
"You don't want to do this, Mark. I'm telling you that you do not want to do this."
I then responded with, "But I've tried all I could, Susan. You know that I've tried, but you just don't care anymore. Our marriage is dying, and I'm tired of doing everything I can to save it when neither of us wants this anymore." Susan then looked at me dead in the eyes and said,
"I'm going to make your life a living hell if you even think about living with me, Mark. I swear that I'll make you suffer, and you'll feel a pain that you've never felt before."
I had never seen Susan like that before, so her words shocked me, but I wasn't going to be bullied into staying, so I said, "There's nothing you can do about it, Susan. I've made up my mind about this, and I hope you can be mature enough to do the same. We aren't happy, so why would you suffer anymore? Come talk to me when you've calmed down." And with that, I left the room. A few minutes after that, Susan called a family meeting in the living room. I told myself that she'd probably thought about our recent conversation, and she was ready to tell the family about our separation. But after we'd all been seated, my heart dropped to my stomach, as Susan was now holding her grandfather's gun and pointing it directly at her own family. My girls started screaming as I begged Susan to drop the weapon, but she didn't listen as she cocked the loaded gun. I instinctively put myself in front of my daughters because I assumed I was the one she wanted to shoot. But Susan wasn't aiming for me as she brutally shot our youngest daughter in the neck. I screamed as I rushed towards her, and Susan took the opportunity to shoot our eldest daughter in the back. Horrified, I immediately took out my phone and dialed 911. As the call went through, I put some distance between Susan and my bleeding daughters, and we managed to run and scramble out of the house. My youngest was bleeding profusely, so she didn't get that far before she collapsed. I could see the fear and terror in her eyes during her last moments as she wondered why her own mother shot her in cold blood. My eldest was still able to run into the street, but Susan didn't let her escape as she shot her twice in the back of the head. Susan tried to shoot her again as my daughter was still moving, but she was out of bullets. She went inside to reload, and she came back to shoot her eldest child again in the head. I watched in horror as my two daughters now lay motionless on the street, and their own mother loomed over them with a gun. At that moment, I didn't care about anything anymore, as I just wanted Susan to shoot me so I could be with my girls. But she didn't. Instead, she looked at me with a devilish grin as she knew she had made me suffer the worst thing any parent could experience. Even though she was standing in front of me, I didn't see my wife anymore. All I saw was a heartless demon. Rage soon filled me, and I wanted to kill her with my bare hands. But before I could do anything, the police arrived. They ordered Susan to drop her weapon, but she didn't listen. And after an extra warning, she was shot dead by the officers as her body fell to the floor. I didn't feel relief, because all I felt at that moment was pure anger. She'd gotten the easy way out after all she'd done, and I wanted her to pay for the atrocities she had committed. It left a bad taste in my mouth because, as much as I hated to admit it, Susan won in the end, as she made sure I saw hell on earth by putting me in eternal suffering as I completely grieve the loss of my daughters. It's been about 7 years since this gruesome night, but every single day, I find myself going back to that night when I let my daughters die at the hands of their own mother. There's no day that I don't blame myself, as I always wish I could have given my girls a better mother. She took everything away from me, and she made sure what she did would destroy me. I can still see her grinning face every time I close my eyes as she laughs and enjoys her victory. There's no moving past this, as no amount of therapy can fix me, and I know that I'll suffer this torment for the rest of my days. The story you just heard was loosely based on the real-life case of Christy Bird Sheets. On the 24th of June, 2016, at around 5 p.m., Christy Sheets brutally shot her daughters, Taylor and Madison Sheets, with a .38 caliber handgun on the street outside their home in Houston, Texas. After the authorities were called, the Fort Bend County Sheriffs shot and killed Christy soon after they arrived at the murder scene, as Christy refused to drop her gun. Her eldest daughter, Taylor, died on the street in front of their home, and her sister, Madison, was quickly flown to the Texas Medical Center, where she unfortunately couldn't be saved. These gruesome murders happened on Christy's husband, Jason Sheets' 45th birthday. She pulled the gun right in front of him and their children, and Jason begged Christy, saying, "Don't do this. There are kids." But his pleas fell on deaf ears, as he was unable to stop the atrocities that happened that night. Jason and his daughters can be heard begging Christy on the 911 call that was made on that fateful night. Mr. Sheets lost his mind after the incident, and he was quickly taken to a nearby hospital as he was suffering from severe emotional distress. A few days after the incident, Jason Sheets was interviewed by the Fort Bend County Sheriff's Office, and he told investigators that his wife had several opportunities to shoot him as well, but he believes she wanted him to live and make him suffer by killing their daughters. Fort Bend County Sheriff Troy E. Nils gave a closing statement on the case, saying, "We look at him as a victim. This is something he is going to have to live with for the rest of his life. She accomplished what she set out to do, which is to make him suffer."
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Normally in these ads, you'd expect someone like me to ask you to buy something. But I want to ask you to do something different. I'm Dave Farenthold, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm an investigative reporter, which means that I follow the money, inside of government and outside of government. The point of my job is to find things people are trying to hide. It involves talking to lots of people. It involves looking through lots and lots of documents. And if there weren't folks like me to go beyond the surface to understand who is really shaping what the government does, the public will be left in the dark about what the government's doing with your tax money, what the government's doing to you through regulations and spending. If you're like me and you think this kind of journalism is important, seek out a news source that does firsthand, fact-based reporting. If that's the New York Times, thank you. If that's your local paper, that's great too, because where you get your information matters.
As for Jason Sheets, he's currently trying his best to move on from the horrific acts carried out by the woman he once called his wife.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Looking for a little Hollywood-style fun? Check out Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways exclusively at Chumba Casino. There's 10,000 ways to play. Get spinning for free at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.